It is a time of challenge and fragile masculinity, an annus horribilis for Australian cricket, a time of hashtag sandpapergate, a hashtag MeToo moment of men behaving badly and men getting caught and much that was hidden being revealed. It's time to join Captain Grizzly and Reverend Custard on a journey with Barclay Street Uniting Cricket Club. A time to enter the mighty dragon's lair in order to seek out hidden treasure. To seek a holy grail filled with healing balm for the chafed inner thigh of Cameron Bancroft. To scratch that itch and to shed some new cricket season summer sunlight on the dark, shame-filled, sandpapered nether regions of Australian cricket soul. It's time for the Dragon Cricket Podcast.
Marcus, so that must mean that there's a new podcast.
It is the Roar of the Dragon. Welcome back. I'm Marcus Curno, the Real Rev. I'm here with Chris Lacey, Captain Grizzly.
G'day, Cats Custard. How are you, buddy?
Good to go. Ready for another episode. As we do in park cricket, you want to go down the ground. A bit of a stretch, mate. Get in the circle, you know, that male bonding experience.
Do the Merv,
stretch it out. You've got a few stretches for us to kick us off for the episode.
A few throwdowns.
What do you got?
I think my final six last week, I talked a little bit about Stevie Smith and Warner and getting back into grade cricket.
Yeah,
and
good that they were having a hit at a lower level.
That's right, you know, because as I said, they could have just cracked the sads and not played any cricket until their suspension was over. They did go back down to grade cricket, which is great.
They did. Davey Warner made 100, actually, 150 in his one-day game there. Got criticised, actually, for over-celebrating the 100. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it was probably a bit silly. I don't know too many cricketers who kissed the badge on the helmet when they make a 100. That was
the big Toyota, oh, what a feeling leap in the air, kiss the Warner trademark. You know, they've been using it in the ads. Some cynical people saying maybe he's trying to get his Toyota. Did he lose that sponsorship?
I don't know.
He trying to get the sponsorship back? I don't know. Brendan McCullum, known for his spirit of cricket, did the Lord's lecture. Interesting voice. Again, part of that Kiwi alternative male cricket culture. Tweeted about it, actually. Geez, Davey, this celebration is the equivalent of Sir Edmund Hillary giving it large, climbing his front steps post-Everest. which is a bit of a dig about making 100 at a lower level and celebrating so hard, maybe. Yep. I don't know, mate. We've talked a lot about your one ever 50. I know Warner's made a few hundreds. But 100's 100 at any grade, isn't it? Surely, particularly given the year that he's had, surely you can jump about a bit and celebrate.
No, I disagree. I think given where he came from, what he's in the midst of, a bit of humility and just a raise in the bat, acknowledging the applause would have been plenty for me. But yeah, fair enough. But speaking of Kiwis,
if we're on Kiwis, the good one you've got to check out is Julian Dennison in the Lynx ad. You know, he's that 15-year-old actor from The Wilder People with Samuel, you know, that classic Kiwi voice.
Yep.
Just starting Deadpool 2, actually.
Okay.
He's too young to be able to see the movie, but he's pretty hot right now. They've got him in a Lynx ad, classic Lynx Australia versus Lynx New Zealand. It's classic about New Zealand male identity. Lacking confidence, can I talk to girls? A few sort of cliches there about a sort of gentler, sort of humbler Kiwi male identity.
Yeah. Well, checking out.
He checks out the Lynx Australia thing. It's all about trying to have this relationship, talk to this girl called Rachel Peckham. The Aussie cuts in on him, gets into a big down ball competition. The Aussies use the sandpaper on the tennis ball. He says to his mate, what do you expect? They're Aussies.
Very good.
And wins it through. Check it out. Whole bit about the whole sandpaper thing, but from a funny little Kiwi meets Lynx, not always known for the new age sensitive male identity sort of cred Lynx, but this actually does a pretty good job,
I reckon. Very good. All right. And, you know, speaking of Kiwis, I think the Southern Stars, the women's team's just swept the series against New Zealand over the last week or so. It was great. I think, you know, Marks, you're over here watching the grand final on last weekend. It was great going straight for Channel 7 to go straight from the grand final into the women's cricket.
Oh, the grand final, so footy, so helter-skelter. Collingwood losing the last couple of minutes. Oh, what a emotional roller coaster. Really nice. I was watching the women's T20. Different vibe. North Sydney Oval. With my daughter, I watched it on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
Much relief. It's good. I quite liked it.
Nice different transition. Vibe. by Channel 7 from footy
and cricket Australia to have cricket and women's cricket. I think they're doing really well. For all you want to say about their problems, they're doing well on women's cricket
they
at
are
the moment.
Doing better than a lot of other sports in that regard. And I'm really looking forward to Channel 7's coverage this summer and what they do with it and what they bring. It's a bit different. Even Andy Ma heading across to Channel 7's interesting, and particularly interested in our mate Damien Fleming and the bowlologist and what he's got to say on mainstream TV.
Bringing it down to local, if we're doing some warm-ups there, had a bit of feedback from Danny Newman on the last podcast, said we've probably milked the Chris Lacey 50 for all it's worth.
Still reckon. Come on, Danny.
There's a bit more we could get because he took five. That was a great game.
50 I've ever made. I'm going to milk it a little bit more. But anyway, point taken, Danny. We'll stop talking about it.
Heath Owen, another Barclay Street Classic, said I had very low expectations about the podcast, but they've been vastly exceeded. Well done, boys. You should think about a career in radio advertising. So there's a man who's obviously played with us, Chris. Very low expectations, thankfully exceeded.
Very good. And speaking of Barclay Street, we had first selection on Thursday night. Marcus, how did we go?
Yeah, well, no turf this week. We're rossed out. Couldn't quite get it, get the pitches up with the weather and post-footy season. This is the reality of cricket in Melbourne, Victoria. Often week one's called off. Good to see some of the Sri Lankan contingent. They can spin
Fernando.
A ball. Yeah, Tharanga, yeah, ABBA music was in the background. It was all the go. Some of his mates were down as well, and, mate, they can hit a ball. So the ones looked pretty strong in terms of the lineup we could name. Second's a little bit more shaky, and, look, we've been trying to run a thirds that has really been about a 10-game comp, struggling to get that up at all, still struggling to find an association that will have us.
Yep.
Been kicked off our ground because of women's soccer, so we've still been trying to find a ground. Some of the politics, you know, this Park Cricket Odyssey, part of the politics of selection night is, do we have a ground? Do we have 22, let alone 33? Often we have about 27 and a half in reality, and you're thinking what we can do. So probably good that we're having a week off. Gives us another week to solve some of those challenges that we're still facing as a local park cricket club in Melbourne. One more throw down here, mate. Remember last week we were talking about male identity and lovers versus fighters versus wise men and kings. Shane Warne released a book, How Can We Talk About Cricket and Male Identity, and not mention Shane Warne's new book.
The Great Lover.
The Great Lover of Australian cricket. Yeah, that's right. Went head-to-head with Steve Waugh, maybe the great king of Australian cricket, certainly that golden era. The alpha Iceman captain leader of men called him a selfish player.
Not just a selfish player, called him the most selfish player he ever played with, which is a big call.
And then said that basically it was because he didn't get selected when he was injured and he thought he should have, and he sulked the whole game in the toilet smoking cigarettes, and that really he did act like a dickhead.
Yeah.
Which is a surprising amount of self-awareness for Shane Warne. And I don't know if that actually helps sort of justify his actions over the years, or, you know, if he wasn't aware, maybe we could let it go. I don't know. Anyway, truth-telling tell-all book from Shane Warne. Check it out in a bookstore near you. Yeah, in the struggle for Australian cricket and male identity gold.
Cool. Well, I feel pretty warm, mate. I don't know about you.
Warmed up, ready to go.
So let's get into the rest of the podcast.
We interrupt this broadcast with this urgent message.
I'm here at senior training with Sam Strawberry Fields. Strawberry Fields forever, as we say. That little mop of red hair running in, opening the bowling. Played the winter comp this season. What was some of the highlights of winter comp for you? Never played before?
No, never played before. One of the definite ones, the first one that comes to mind would be yourself, Marcus, playing in a kilt.
Awesome. I love it when I'm someone's highlight.
Not something you see every day.
Sort of sad for a young cricketer to have to say that. But any other things you enjoyed playing winter cricket?
Oh, just... I suppose a shorter form of the game, you see a lot more sixes, you know. It's entertaining. Not that I hit many, but it's all right. It's good to watch.
Thank you, Sam. Strawberry Field.
Marcus, in your recent trip over to Cornwall, to your homeland, you got to play a couple of cricket games and meet a couple of interesting characters, and I think we're going to hear from one right now.
Yeah, that's right, mate, Jack Richards. It's great. There was a big battle on for the Cornwall County League. So, yeah, I managed to get an interview with him.
G'day, well, this is Marcus Curnow, and I'm sitting at the picturesque Werrington Cricket Ground in North Cornwall. I'm on tour. I'm playing for the 4th 11 on the second ground, but just looked over and playing for Falmouth. Just over the way here for the ones is an old legend of Cornish cricket. Not many Cornish people have played for England. It's Jack Richards. 8 tests, I think, for England.
Yeah. Not enough.
Yes. Yeah. No. I heard about that as well.
After I beat you guys, they didn't pick me anymore. then we didn't win for 25 years. How good are the selectors then?
There you go. So not many Cornishmen have played for England. So that was a bit of a big deal.
Yeah. The other one was crap.
When did he play?
Jack Crap in 1930.
Was that his name?
That was his name.
His name was Jack Crap.
Yeah.
Well, you're a step up from Jack Crap. So,
maybe.
Well done. You're looking over the beautiful Bodmin Moor and, you know, Cornish countryside. It's archetypal village park cricket scene. We're from the Dragon Cricket Podcast in Melbourne.
Been there.
The Barclay Street Cricket Club, 93 years old. We say, it's all about park cricket. And
participation, getting involved.
That's right. Key, so Merv Hughes grew up in our neighbourhood, actually. He was around, and we were talking to him the other day. I know you had a few run-ins with Merv in your time. Tell us about the 1987 Test Series, where you were backup keeper, but then you got selected.
Yeah, I basically got selected because the batting didn't do the job. So, now I could bat a little bit, and even though I got a duck in my first Test match, I still was able to get a few runs. And I think the Australians had... were classed for not having the great seed team, but they were growing, they were changing, and we had some great times with Merv and Steve Waugh, Bruce Reid. Yeah, you had quite a good side. I think we had a brilliant side, but
yeah. Now Merv was famous for having run-ins with Ian Botham, particularly around the sledging, and they're pretty good at going back and forth with each other. Right? Have any run-ins with Merv?
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, I thought Merv was archetypal. Great Australian, he's enjoyed his beer and enjoyed running in, and he was a wholehearted cricketer, and he would give respect as well, as much as he'll get involved with this staging. But I remember once we were playing at Adelaide and I just got 100 at Perth. I had to get that one in, and I came back and he bombed me a snort of a bouncer, really, and I really smelt the leather, and he's come up snorting at me. And he looked at me and said, "Well played, Jack," and just went off. But the crowd didn't see that. And it was just gave us what a good personality is. He's brilliant.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
No, no, sometimes the rumours about Merv's sledging were actually not quite as, as fearsome as what they are seen. He was a fun guy.
Well, you cross the white line and you have your fun and you have a go at each other. But afterwards in that series, remember, we still went in each other's dressing room after the day's play and had a beer. And that's I suppose that was still the good way of doing it. And I think that made it still, although we did well, it was still an enjoyable series to actually not just play against the top in Australia, but also to actually be able to meet and be social with the Australian players.
Yeah, which is what we love about park cricket. Obviously, we're under cultural review after our sandpaper gate crisis. Some of our best players are sitting out for a year, and there's been a lot of talk about that as our summer approaches. I'm just interested in your reflections on sort of the culture of cricket. We're on a quest for saving Australian cricket and the spirit of cricket from the grassroots up. What's some of your reflections on that incident?
Yeah, I think that's quite serious, because... Of course, one can only explain why would the best team in the world want to do that. But I suppose it goes down in the actual pressure is putting on the players now. I think the players are cocooned and then put a lot of pressure, media pressure, social media pressure.
Yeah.
And maybe, unless that's brought into perspective and brought into the fact that no matter the participation still is good, winning is all and the end all. But it's how you win, which is more important. And, I feel for the guys that did a bit. You can condone what they've done.
Yeah.
But obviously, it goes without saying, looking what these guys, self-made men, they've never had it easy, that they've been forced down an avenue to take such a decision, which is surprising.
Obviously, ball tampering, you get a week or a game off for that officially. But they've been given a year partly because of the way people have seen maybe Australian cricket and some of the behaviour and sledging and some of the cultural problems. And that's why we're having this review. What's your take on that as someone who's played for England against some of the guys that were seen as some of the rough and tough at that time?
Yeah, Well, you're there. I mean, it is the number one sport, isn't it? It's one of the major sports in Australia.
Yeah.
And your Australian players are really put on a pedestal. And there's a consequence for that. You know, as much as you have the riches and the praise and the contracts, you still have to adhere to the spirit of the game. Idea to make sure you do things right. And the same will apply for business. You know, if people go out in business and start, they'll look at that as being, hello, you don't last very long in business to do the same. So really, in my opinion, it's disappointing that such class people find they have to do that.
Yeah.
And my take is maybe it's gone on a bit longer than people think.
Yeah.
And that's, I suppose that's the biggest disappointment. Yeah. If it was just a pure one-off, you think, hey, bloody silly idiots.
Yeah.
But everybody's got a simple idea that maybe this is a bit longer. And so I've seen you've got the five minute bell. But I think all in all, you know, I think in Australia and England, you know, winning is becoming too much for everybody. The academies, kids having to perform and think it's a job, it's going to become their job. And it's not the case. You know, as you said earlier, the elite few will get through, but there's a lot of people who will be disappointed.
Yeah.
But really, at the end of the day, if everybody didn't participate and enjoy participating, you wouldn't have a game. You wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have played for your fourths. You know, everybody be home in front of the bloody iPad or whatever, and I would not have any enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, I mean, you are here today, and obviously, you know, we're all about park.
Oh, mate.
We're all about
bloody
park.
Hell.
Park cricket is the true spirit of cricket, we reckon.
I'm 60.
You know, 60.
I'm 60
years old.
And you're
still down here playing park cricket
in Cornwall. Yeah, well, I think that's the idea.
Why are you doing it?
Because I want to give something back, see if I can, you know, Falmouth needed some youngsters, and I thought I could give something to help them.
Yeah.
Judging by the batting today, we got bought out for 146. After
Falmouth were 5 for 15 at some point.
Yeah.
I think it was,
yeah,
wasn't
we got 146,
great.
So how good are we?
Yeah,
I mean,
got a few on the board,
yeah,
some to chase.
And I think, you know, we need, in Cornwall especially, you know, it's a deprived area, it's got difficulties, and we just need participation, but enjoyment.
Yeah.
Why can't people just... Why is it winning the end-all and be-all? You know, you can still enjoy and not win.
You're a pretty determined cricketer, though. You had a reputation for being fiery and speaking up about selectors. Tell us about your 100 in Perth, because not many have made 100, especially in Perth.
Mate, I'll first tell you about my duck
in Brisbane.
My mum
made a duck in Brisbane.
My mum travelled thousands of miles, and she was on the TV for me to go out and come back after the third ball. But, you know... I tried hard to play Test cricket, and suddenly I got the Test match. We won that game, and they found it difficult to change the winning side. I think my key thing, the 100, but I got a stumping of Dean Jones in the second innings.
Yeah.
Which is one of the best stumpings I've ever done because it kept low. And I suppose, all in all, I had a great series, you know, and I was confident.
Yeah.
And I like a bit of competition, and I like the Australians being at me, and I love that. And I suppose they gave it to me, and of course when both of them's out, your next one in, you're going to cop it big time.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that.
I really enjoyed that.
Maybe really played better.
Yeah.
And I got back to England, and it all went a bit belly up, really. You know.
Yeah.
You know. I think I love the toughness of Australia. I played in North Sydney for a season.
Okay, great.
Did well there. Enjoyed that. Those days, I think the Australians enjoyed playing against me as well. So I had a great time there. I must admit, you guys, I love the way you play. You do your sport. I love the way you get involved in it.
Mm.
And I love the way you look after your cricketers and your sportsmen.
Yeah, okay.
England can learn a lot from that.
Yeah, great. Excellent.
That's important. You really look after your sportsmen very, very well. And don't then think it's all bad.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, that's good. That's good to know. That's a good word from us. So it's great to be here. The fourth 11 have gone back on, so they're playing with 10. First, he's still having the having tea, so I better run.
I heard they're doing even better.
Hey, thanks for talking to the...
I've heard they're doing even better without you.
Thanks for talking to the Dragon Cricket Podcast.
Cheers, boy. No
thanks,
problem.
Mate. Well, thanks, Jack.
Appreciate that.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Today we are promoting club sponsor Splashdown, which is one of Australia's premier bathroom providers. They specialise in portable toilet hire for corporate and all-around events.
Oh, yeah, Chris, I think I've seen their trucks driving around the western suburbs.
Absolutely. I mean, they've got offices in Melbourne and Adelaide, and they specialise in big events like Flemington and Calder Park. And Splashdown is now celebrating 30 years of service in the event industry. They offer a wide range of bathroom options for hire. They'll excel in providing your clients and bottoms the comfort they expect. Splashdown also provide portable toilets for construction sites. And and offer punctual and reliable toilet servicing to sites on a weekly, fortnightly, or even monthly basis. It's a long time to have some poo sitting in a porta potty.
Oh, that's right. Now, look, they sponsor the club, but I think they also sponsored that movie about portable toilets, Kenny. You know, that famous Aussie movie that made Shane Jacobson, the actor, famous, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Kenny? Yeah, that's right, Kenny. Yeah, it's a great movie. And from the biggest festival to the smallest church social, Kenny delivered portaloos to them all. Ignored and unappreciated, he is one of the cogs in society's machinery, a knight in shining overalls taking care of business with his faithful splashdown crew.
Yeah, that's right. The movie follows Kenny as he tackles every septic challenge and ends up in this sort of pilgrimage to some sort of poo conference in Las Vegas or something. Poo HQ, as Kenny calls it.
Yeah, that's right. And it was fly on the wall honesty and wit. Kenny lifted the lid on Australia's roughest diamonds as he juggles family tensions, fatherhood and sewage with charm, humour and unflinching dignity.
He says, "It takes a certain kind of person to do what I do. No one's ever impressed. No one's ever fascinated. If you're a fireman, all the kids will want to jump on the back of your truck and follow you to a fire. There's going to be no kids willing to do that with me. So I don't do it to impress people. It's a job. It's my trade. And I actually think I'm pretty good at it."
He's a bit of a philosopher as well, and obviously comedian, and he's all heart. Kenny is living proof that in sewage, just like life, the best will always rise to the top.
Like Splashdown. So, actually, there's a real connection with Splashdown and Barclay Street. I think some of the people who have actually played cricket for the club were actually in the movie.
Yeah, all right, awesome.
Yeah. So, if you have a smell in here that will outlast religion, or if you need help, like in the movie where Kenny's calculating the piss-to-shit ratio, you know, how many curries, how many beers, how many people are at the event, the water-based or liquid waste ratios. If you need help with that, you need to contact Splashdown.
And you can contact Splashdown to discuss the bathroom hire or portable toilet hire in your area, particularly in Melbourne and Adelaide, and they'll be happy to provide a no-obligation quote for your event. As Kenny says in the movie, Australians all let us ring Joyce on 03-9314-6700.
That's 9314-6700.
And now, on with the show.
So we've got the selection. Partly we've been thinking about, hey, if we're going to change the culture of Australian cricket, who do we need in the team? And who are some of the influential sort of male identity, positive masculinities, thinkers, writers, be they men or women, who've helped shape our thinking? And look, we did Richard Rohr last episode.
We did.
Mm. Chris, this week I think we have to go, if we're just looking at runs on the board, books sold, conferences spoken at, yep, we have to go with Steve Bidoff. Wrote Manhood, wrote Raising Boys. Obviously a key popular thinker in Australian cultural identity around what it means to be a bloke.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I was first introduced to Steve Bidoff, I think, when my dad brought Manhood home and read it.
Wow.
And I didn't know what that was about, but after he finished reading, he popped it up on the shelf, and I had a bit of a read of it too. So we never actually talked about it, to be honest with you. But it was interesting to see my dad thinking about that stuff.
It's often the conversation that happens, the idea of talking about being male is easier than actually doing it. But even just having the book on the bookshelf,
yeah, means we're both thinking about it, even when we're not talking about it.
Exactly.
Which is interesting. So,
not nothing.
Not at all. And so, so Steve Bidoff, look, really interesting guy. And I think, you know, I think his books around parenting have been really interesting as well, both Raising Boys and Raising Girls. I think his wife Sharon's been really influential too in a lot of that family-based stuff. So they do a lot of stuff together. So important to mention Sharon in the mix of it too. But the Raising Boys stuff is probably what I want to think about a bit today, because I think, you know, from Bidoff's perspective, you know, in order to have good and healthy men, you need to be working on them from when they're boys and when they're kids.
Yeah.
And same with those girls too. But particularly thinking around masculinity, we're thinking about men, I suppose, in this particular chat. And so he talks a bit about how families have changed and parenting's changed and fatherhood's changed. Like a few hundred years ago, boys would have a number of men in their lives all the time. Dad normally works really close to home.
if not in the home.
Mm.
And so Dad was more present, even if he was busy working still. And I suppose that whole, you know, industrialisation, the factory and going off to work was a whole new sort of concept. And his real view is that we hadn't really replaced that with much.
Mm.
And so he was really advocating for a bit of a change. He talks a bit about the three stages of boyhood, and so that kind of 0 to 6 stage where you need mum, boys need mum around a lot and engage and connect a lot with mum. And from about 6 to sort of 13, 14, it's all about dad, and really important years for dads to be focusing on connecting with their kids. And then beyond that, which I think is really interesting, is other male mentors or other mentors being in your life from sort of 14 and over. And if you don't, you know, in that period before that time, if you don't introduce your sons to good people, then they'll find mentors in other places, and either with friends or, you know, unhealthy, potentially unhealthy sort of places as well. So really important to try and introduce your kids and your sons to other men. And I suppose that's part of the interesting aspect from a cricket perspective, particularly when you think about junior cricket, Marcus. And I know you've had a lot, you've done a lot of coaching and been coordinating cricket for a long time. And I suppose I'm involved with the footy club too, where, you know, getting coaches and good coaches is always really important. And one of the things we think about the footy club is not just about whether they know how to teach people how to kick and, you know, mark and some tactic stuff, but also are they going to be good role models for our players? And you know, that idea of mentorship and role modelling through cricket. So I don't know if you've got any thoughts around that, and particularly around Barker Street.
Yeah, look, I think you know, when I played junior cricket, I think local sport was often a symptom of this broader problem that parents were absent from a lot of their kids' lives. And I know sport was something that was outsourced. I went off, but there was no expectation that my parents would come. And sometimes you either had really great coaches or you had child abusers in reality.
Yeah, right.
That's people's a lot of experience of growing up in the 60s, 70s, 80s. I don't know. So, look, I think that's changed a lot. You know, a bit off thing about, you know, it's not about quality time. It's actually about quantity time. As a junior coach now, I think parents are way more involved. In fact, in his new book, The New Manhood, sort of the update of that original mid-90s version, he sort of says parents basically are spending maybe statistically 3 times more time with their kids these days, which I think is really good. And that's part of the package deal these days with junior sport. You have to be providing something not just for a kid but for a whole family, which is probably healthy. It means there's more of those role models around.
So the 4 key ideas that Bidoff talks about in terms of what need to be focusing on around parenting boys is the first one, and spending time with your kids. Early on in his books, he really debunks that whole concept that used to get around quality time versus quantity time. He says that's a load of hokum, basically, to paraphrase, because it's actually the general ins and outs of family life and actually being present for the ups and downs and the conversations is actually more important than any kind of, you know, specifically focused quality time. Second one, which is interesting, but particularly for younger kids, is to be playing rough and tumble games with them early on. And don't be afraid of that, I suppose, is his big thing, because there's a lot that boys learn about their own bodies, about their own strength, where the boundaries are, and how to say no and how to hear no, how to hear stop, and the rules and stuff around that stuff, which is really important. And touch is not appropriate. They know what that feels like and how to say no to it too, which I think is really important. Big one is around respecting women and teaching that from as early as possible. And he's big on that. Boys pick up most of their signals of that, about how mum and dad relate to each other and how dad talks about mum and grandma and sisters and all that stuff and the women in their lives. So just being really conscious of that. And the last one, which can be hard, you know, it's even for myself, getting in touch with your tender feelings is not something I did a lot of when I was a kid necessarily, but just the importance of acknowledging that kids have boys have a tender side, and to be acknowledging that and giving them room to explore that and to honour that part of their life, rather than always saying, come on, toughen up, or boys don't cry, and all these kinds of things that are often the messages that we receive when we were kids. And actually that actually just messes your kid up more than it helps. So actually acknowledging that those tender feelings are there and to help your boy learn how to explore those in a positive way.
I think that's really important. I think cricket has a lot to offer when it comes to that. It takes time to play cricket, even junior, these shortened junior formats. It actually takes a bit of time. So unlike some other sports, there's actually enough time, I think, for families and other people to get around their boys. Obviously, connecting brain and body is part of the art of cricket, as much in the head as it is about learning the physical skills.
It's as important as the head and the eye.
There's a lot, I think, that in raising boys and developing good men that cricket has to offer as a unique sort of set of skills and sport and social sort of relationships that I'm actually quite positive about.
Yeah.
One of the critiques of Bidoff is that he has to paint this sort of negative picture that maleness is in crisis or things are only getting worse. I had a mate who, you know, read the book and went to his dad, and dad was quite threatened. What do you mean? I wasn't emotional, or we're not close enough. You should have seen my relationship with my dad and what he said about his relationship with his dad. And actually, things aren't getting worse. Things are actually okay. And I think his new manhood book's a really interesting one, where he actually acknowledges that in some ways, yeah, there has been some movement since he first wrote this in the mid-90s. Steve Smith, Dave Warner, you know, they're banned for a year, but they're crying on national TV. I remember growing up seeing Kim Hughes. Kim Hughes crying.
I remember watching that Steve Smith and going, my goodness, putting this in Kim Hughes.
Yeah,
side by side.
Yeah, in the mid-80s when he gave up the captaincy.
And the response and the reaction to that was just scorn, you know, which is way different to the reaction to the Steve Smith stuff.
So I think in some ways, even cricket culture-wise, whilst there's lots of problems, there is lots of progress around some of this sort of stuff.
Mm. Yeah, Steve can be accused of reducing things down to stereotypes a bit and can paint a bit of a negative picture at times, which I think he's faced up to, and he kind of talks about that stuff more. So he uses more positive language and positive examples, I think, when he does his seminars. Sometimes his books can paint sort of a bit of a negative picture if you just take out some isolated quotes.
It can be a simple and popular...
Yeah. Which you need for a 12-chapter book that's going to sell. You kind of need to reduce things down to stereotype ideas, I suppose.
So he has runs on the board. You know, he's obviously a key thinker, who you want in your team. But sometimes I think it's a little bit simple. He teaches sort of, you know, line and length, play straight. But, you know, which you can't play cricket without that, obviously. But does it get you to tee at 5 o'clock when things are desperate, or does it win you the game? Sometimes I want something a little bit more. These are some basic sort of things that he's talked about, and it's been his bread and butter since the mid-90s. It's great to reconnect with your father or have some male friends.
Mm.
But is it deep enough, Chris?
Yeah, well sometimes... Mentioned to me earlier off air about some of the new stuff. He's talking about how we're you know, blokes have got the hardware, but we don't necessarily have the software around maleness. And so some of these concepts, I think, might be a little bit around the software stuff and actually making the connections for blokes, and sometimes simplifying that down to four key things to do is important to make those synapses early, and then you get more complicated as you go. I agree, sometimes we're after more, and that's what we're looking for here in this podcast and the conversation we're having, is trying to unpack stuff a bit more and get a bit more into some of the depth of things. But I still think he deserves a spot in our side.
Absolutely.
Good to get an Aussie in the squad early on too. And I think his wife probably deserves a spot too. Maybe they can share the batting and the bowling in a partnership kind of context. So, Steve Bidoff is our next player into our team of great thinkers around masculinity. Opening the batting in there with Richard Raw. And if you want to check out more about Steve Bidoff's stuff, we've mentioned a couple of his books. You can find those online. We might even post something on the Facebook page, a link to some of those books, and maybe for Richard too, just so people who want to follow it through can go a bit deeper if they want to.
Time again for chatting after the game. It's time for Merv's Aftermath.
That's what I love about park cricket, is the aftermath. Time in the rooms with the teammates and the club guys is what it's all about.
This episode's aftermath comes to you from the sheds of the Warrington Cricket Club in Cornwall, where the real Rev is talking with 71-year-old opening bowler for the Wherry 4th 11, Brian Trotter-Baxter.
So what would you say to Steve Smith or Dave Warner?
What would I say to him?
Yeah, because you're playing cricket at 71. See, I reckon you can only change Australian cricket from the grassroots, from the bottom up. There's something about the culture of cricket that's more about this. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I mean, cheating's cheating, isn't it? And I think the Pakistanis have done it in the past. Got away with certain things. I'm not saying that England are squeaky clean. You know, everybody's... It's a money thing, isn't it? It's money, isn't it?
It is. From Penzance to...
When I made business, I met a guy once who played for Somerset.
Yeah.
Professional cricket back in the 70s and 80s. Yeah. He played with Botham, Garner,
okay,
Viv Richards.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing.
And I came upon him through work.
Yeah.
And we became very good friends socially and in work.
Okay.
He died, unfortunately. Peter Denon, he was called.
Yeah, yeah.
Dasher. They used to call him Dasher. Yeah,
Dasher Denon.
Do you remember?
Yeah,
do you
remember? Yeah, no, it rings a bell.
Hell of a nice guy. Really nice guy. And he said to me one day, he said, I was born too early.
Yeah.
Because the money they were earning then and what they're earning now is obscene. It is obscene now. Mm. And he realised, obviously, that he had to give up early because he had bad knees, you know. But he would run. That's why they got the nickname Dasher.
Yeah, right.
But Jack Richards, I said to him when we were down at Truro that day, you know, do you remember Peter Denon? Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, good boy. You know, blah blah blah. Played against him lots of times. Blah blah.
Yeah.
Had a good laugh. Had a drink afterward. Blah blah. And he's very similar. Jack is very similar. The short time I've known him. To Peter that I knew very well in the end, and poor bugger died of cancer. Well, a few years ago, he used to come back here on a Saturday. He'd come down every once a year, the Royal Cornwall Show.
Yeah.
He'd have to go down with the trade tent. He worked for a grain company in Bridgewater.
Right.
And he'd have to go down, and I carried grain on my lorries. I had a haulage firm, and I got to know him through that, obviously, and. I walked in there one day to pick up a load, and I didn't know he was working there, and I walked in, and there he is behind the counter, and I immediately recognised him. I said, Dasher. Yeah. He said, yeah. Who are you then? He said, and so I give him a card. Yeah. I'd only just started in business. This was in 86, I think it was.
Yeah.
1986. And we remained friends all the time, all through the years. Never had a cross word. He was a hell of a bloke to deal with. He was fair. He would pay the rate. He wouldn't quibble about the rate. You'd done the job. You know, everything was spot on with a guy. And a bull bucker died of cancer.
Yeah, right.
It's sad, isn't it? It really is sad.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've been up to Taunton a few times, and they've got a gate. There's several gates, different places going into the ground.
Yeah.
And he's got a gate with his name and his picture on there. And you know, fair dues, he was a hell of a guy.
Yeah, right.
And it just—he should be still here now. I mean, Christ, yeah. he was only a bit older than me.
Yeah.
But you know, he told me some stories. Like, you know, I said, "How'd you get on facing Michael Holden?"
Yeah.
He said, "Fucking naked." He said, "Get on the other end quick." and let fucking both of them get on with it.
Yeah.
But that's how. But that's—it's nice to see an insight.
Yeah.
To the professional game, yeah, I found it fascinating.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's happening here. At Werrington, or just, you know, locally around Cornwall.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's guys. I mean, the guy that runs Cornwall, he's the manager of Cornwall. He played here, Godfrey Furs. Oh, his father played here because he was a local guy. He had a wooden leg. He used to keep wicket.
Was he a pirate?
He was fucking brilliant.
Is he a Cornish pirate?
He was brilliant. He had
kept with a wooden leg.
Yes.
No way.
He was fucking brilliant.
Fantastic story.
His hands. Eye-hand coordination was brilliant.
That's, wow.
He really was.
He kept with a wooden leg. Well,
there's a photograph in there. I go back that far. I mean, half of these youngsters, they don't know half of what went on here. But
yeah.
When there was one team, and Ron Furs was his name, and he had this wooden leg, and he obviously, when he went to bat, he had to have a runner.
Yeah, okay.
And we had some real
fun. So he wasn't injured in the game.
No, but everyone accepted.
That's what I love about Park Cricket, because there's the laws of cricket, and there's a sense, you know, cricket doesn't have rules, it has laws, and laws can be flexible, can be interpreted.
Of course they can.
You know, so if captains agree,
yes,
lots of things can happen
that don't happen in
other sports.
They did.
So he was a runner, and he had a runner every week.
Half decent bat. But we used to have some cock-ups with the run-outs because but there was always the one same guy that did the running for him. And then when he got used to it, then it was okay, quite smooth.
Yeah,
to get the odd cock up.
That is...
Because runners are a pain in the ass.
Totally.
They're in the way.
Totally. People would hate playing these guys because every time is, oh, this is a bloke with a runner.
We really had some laughs with it.
But who's going to tell the guy with the wooden leg that he can't have a runner when he bats?
He had a wooden leg, end of.
You know, could he hit it?
Well, yeah, he was...
Did he hit boundaries or is he a quick single sort of guy?
No, I can't really remember. I don't think he was a big hitter like that. But, he could hit the ball. He could bat. He was a left-hander. Is our mate Jack gone or not? That's our only claim to fame, Jack Richards.
Jack Richards, I know.
Have you interviewed him?
I did today. That's why I was an overlay.
Oh, is that what you're doing?
That's why I was interviewing
They're
him.
They're all going mental. Oh, where's no. that fucking Aussie? Denzel's going mental.
I had the microphone. I was talking to Jack Richards.
You ain't freaking recording me, are you?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, twat.
Well, I asked you. You said yes.
No, I didn't know. I didn't know.
I'm just sitting
swear words and all.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's good, mate. It's the real deal. So did you ever play with Jack?
No.
No.
Played against him, don't we? Playing down at Truro.
Because he plays for Falmouth, is that right?
Yeah.
Jack Richards?
Yeah.
Okay.
But we had this silly game of the council and I go down.
Oh, you joined that?
Yeah.
No way. Was that good?
Well, not really. It's just a silly fucking game. The 20 over thrash, really.
Right, okay.
And Jack Richards was keeping and I'm bowling and I'm thinking, hurt me, I'll never repeat this, will I? Hey, ex-England cricketer, and I'm bowling to it.
Yeah.
And he's just picking them like apples, like, either side of the stuff. One down leg side, like you're just doing it looking the other way. Like,
he wasn't even looking.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Wait, wicket keepers are born, they're not made.
No, that's true, isn't it?
Six.
Oh, and there goes the call. Last six, six more to go. We're going to our end of the episode. Last six, a bit like at the Nets when you've had a bit of a shocker. You at least try and hit the last six out of the park, mate.
That's right.
So this is the time in the episode where we sum it up. Maybe some things we've learnt or some predictions about cricket going forward.
Absolutely, yeah. So let me go first.
Number one.
I think, really looking forward to seeing some test cricket over the next few weeks. Obviously, Australia playing against Pakistan over the UAE.
I'm not hopeful, mate. I'm worried.
Yeah. Peter Siddle's there, though, so that's good.
Oh, well, he's not in the team yet. There's a bit to go.
There is a bit to go.
We'll see.
But it looks like Finchie and Head will both make their test debut. So looking forward to that and a really good test series over there.
Very good.
What about your first one, mate?
My first one is an article in The Age by Malcolm Knox talking about the illusion of change in Australian cricket culture. And so that's worth a real good read, I think, if we're thinking about cricket culture.
Yep.
His predictions about the review, really. He says we've changed things at the top down. Obviously, Kevin Roberts announced this week replacing Sutherland. He was the head kicker in the pay dispute. The players hate him. Don't know how that's going to go.
Allegedly, yes.
Langer's the coach. Obviously, we've got Marsh and Hazelwood now, vice-captains, Payne as captain. We've replaced the top end of the culture, which at one level needed to happen.
Mm.
He's sort of arguing that a bit like the Argus review or Colin Carter's review on governance over the last few years, that this ethics review is not actually going to do what it takes. We've got this sort of thing to say, you know what, the mess over there, there's something conservative in cricket that actually is more about avoiding the mess or real avoiding real change. Really interesting.
Mm.
Saying, one level, great the numbers article. Have never been better. Great article.
Mm.
Numbers have never been better in terms of TV dollars. But that's live TV throwing their last hurrah, really, is that sort of being digitally disrupted. Big money. Is it sustainable, is his question. So Cricket Australia doing women really well, doing high level really well, except for all the cultural problems. maybe doing kids' participation. But his real thing is, where's cricket at in terms of park cricket and participation, and the real struggle of lots of clubs, which is the odyssey that we're on right here. So really relevant article going forward.
Great article, and we might even post it on our Facebook page, so for those who want to grab that, so I really encourage people to read that. Great interview from Jack Richards, Marcus.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. And, obviously a great cricketer. Obviously, he's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder about how he was treated by the
body English selectors.
A whole generation do, actually. Yeah. The Gowers and Gooches got selected for way too long, yeah, some would argue. So, Gadding.
But look, you know, making 100 Perths a big deal. So good get with that interview. And it was also great to hear that there was a Cornishman who played for England named Crap.
That was something we learnt. That was something we learnt.
Something we learnt, yep. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Yep. While we're talking about the Test match coming up in the UAE, Victorian resurgence, yes, Chris. Peter Siddle, yes. Yeah. No Glenn Maxwell.
No
obviously.
Big Show, yes.
And look, that continues to be a saga for me. In a Steve Bidoff cricketing world, there's something about a Glenn Maxwell X Factor that I love. He's just been out on Ashes Cricket. Check out a video on YouTube. It's got Glenn Maxwell Ashes Cricket video game. It's got him with all the dots on doing the warm-ups for his character in the video game, yep, carrying up. He takes this divergent tangent where he just takes off all these other players, Justin Langer, Matty Hayden, Steve Smith, takes the piss out of Steve Smith, which is pretty raw, which is pretty funny given that there's where been some are at, barriers to selection. Steve Smith actually gets a go later on now, and there's a more recent one where he takes off Maxwell and just leaves one on middle, just up in a dot sort of suit. So anyway, check out that video online. It's hilarious. Glenn Maxwell is a genius, whatever you say. That is bread and butter cricket.
Cool. That's another video we might post on our Facebook page. Look, prediction for me, the cricket team that Max and I pulling together, the thirds. Barker Street also mentioned some of the challenges, but my prediction is that we will have a ground and we will have
an association.
A competition to play in by the next episode.
Sometime in October.
Yeah.
Or maybe November. Maybe this cricket season.
Well, you know, as long as we get on the park, Marcus, that's the most important
call,
thing.
Mate. It is a 3rd-11 for Barclay Street this year. I'm hoping and praying.
Whatever it is, the 10th of October.
It's a struggle.
It is an odyssey, but it is getting a bit beyond a joke. So it would be good to have those things locked away so we can get a team on the park.
Last one!
All right, last one. I'm giving a shout-out to some of my under-11s kids. I'm the coach of the Barclay Street Dragons under-11s.
Go Dragons!
I'm doing a shout-out this episode to Jake and Sam. They have literally altered their family's long service leave holiday plans. It was all set up for America. Apparently, they've put in a last-minute bid to go to the UK and be there for the 2019 Ashes. So shout-out, Jake and Sam. Well done. There's hope for the culture of Australian cricket when you've got under-11s who cannot change the family
you
venue.
You skipped going to Disneyland to go to Lords, mate. That's pretty good. Pretty
when impressive. I was 10 years old, I wasn't negotiating with my family to go to the Ashes in the UK. So well done, boys. That'll be a great experience.
On them out.
Fantastic. Well, that's it for another episode of the Dragon Cricket Podcast. Thanks heaps for listening. Please share with your friends and family that this podcast is going there. We'd like as many people to hear it as we can. Subscribe at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcast from. And please don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes if you can, because that does help people find us. Enjoy your week in cricket, and we'll talk to you again soon.
You have been listening to the Dragon Cricket Podcast, broadcast from the Barclay Street Uniting Cricket Club of Melbourne's Inner West. Legal disclaimer, the views and opinions contained herein do not necessarily reflect the official position of the Barclay Street Uniting Cricket Club. Brought to you by Cricket Journeyman, who, in a time of Australian cricket crisis, undertook a quest to rediscover the true spirit of Australian suburban park cricket. Arise, you purple dragons, feel the fire, enter your lair of gold.